Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. This Sunday marks the third annual Dwell in the IDL showcase of residential developments in downtown Tulsa. And over the course of the past 3 years, you can see how the downtown residential market has rapidly matured. And this year's tour features 8 properties ranging from historic places like the Mayo Hotel and Phil Tower Lofts to 3 new properties, the Harrington Lofts at 7th and Main, the Coliseum Apartments at 6th and Elgin, and Urban 8 at 2nd and Kenosha. The properties range from adaptive reuse of historic buildings to creative new constructions. Joining me today is Amanda DeCourt, the Executive Director of the Tulsa Foundation for Architecture, which presents the event, and TFA Trustee Architect Ted Reeds, who conducts many of the group's second Saturday downtown walking tours. Dwell in the IDL gets underway at noon on Sunday from the launch point, which is Dwelling Spaces at 119 South Detroit. There's further information at the Tulsa Foundation website, and Amanda and Ted join us today on Studio Tulsa. Amanda and Ted, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
I want to ask you first, the Dwell in the IDL tour is taking place again this weekend. And have we reached the critical mass where you have people living downtown and where amenities and further development are just going to naturally occur? Because a lot of this development has come through a lot of hard work, historic preservation, some tax increment and abatement districts. But have we reached that level where enough people are living downtown that developers are naturally going to go downtown for further development?
I think we're close. If we're not there yet, we're almost there. We're seeing a lot more demand for downtown real estate, and a lot of the buildings that appear to be vacant or underutilized, there's a project already in the works. So I think we'll continue to see more.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're very close to reaching that critical mass. There are some new developments going up that are for sale, the Urban 8 being one of them, which is on our tour. But there are others in the planning stages as well.
Yeah, and it seems like for everyone that is absolutely up and going, there's others that are in various stages of development. Is that just a sense of how soft or strong the market is, or what exactly? Or are there a lot of hoops to go through if you're taking an existing building and converting it into living space?
I think anytime you're creating living space, there are lots of hurdles, lots of things that have to be checked off, and you've got a lot of developments take some time, add a historic building into that, and it's going to take even longer. But I think that the end result is going to be worth it. I know that we have enough. We could probably do 3 more Dwell in the IDL tours with the backlog of projects that are in the works.
Yeah. So. And for those projects that seem to be moving very slowly, is there a reason for that? Is it just a matter of the developments taking a while to get going?
Sometimes they just take a while to get going. We have one development that's near and dear to my heart because Tulsa Foundation for Architecture helped with a visioning process before the current owner bought it. It was hanging out there and kind of vacant, and everyone said, what are we going to do with this?
And what building was this?
That's the downtown YMCA. Mm-hmm. It was on last year's tour as a hard hat, come see it before we do anything. But that particular development group decided after they were partway through, you know what, we want to use the historic tax credits, and we're changing tracks. So that is one reason that particular project is taking a little bit longer, because they changed tracks in the middle.
And one thing to remember is that not all development downtown or adaptive reuse is too residential. There's a lot of companies relocating to downtown for their businesses across from the ballpark. There's a large architecture firm going in. Ross Construction is moving their headquarters directly across from a bicycle shop downtown. and Warren is a big fan of ours as well. And I think that's good that we are seeing not just residences, bars, and baseball fields, but we're seeing mixed use where people can work and play.
Now you mentioned the historic preservation tax credit. How important is that to what's already occurred and what is occurring now? Because every year at the legislature, that's on, at least in some legislators' firing aim as far as taking aim at that particular tax credit.
Fire, aim.
Yeah, right. Well, how important is it?
It's crucial. It's that historic tax credit has been our bread and butter downtown. And I didn't even ask you to ask me that, but you've set me up perfectly for one of the things that Tulsa Foundation for Architecture is working on right now is an economic impact study to be able to demonstrate exactly what economic benefits the historic tax credit program has brought to Tulsa and to the state of Oklahoma. So we're excited about that project. But almost all of the renovation projects on our tours have been historic tax credit projects. It's always going to cost more to redevelop a building downtown or even to build a new building downtown. You have the stadium assessment. You have a lot of things going on downtown. And the dirt just costs more. So there has to be something to bridge that gap to make it financially feasible to redevelop an existing building. So we see historic tax credits used a lot. We see new market tax credits, which are incredibly competitive. We see those combined with historic tax credits. The downtown improvement funds that come from Vision 2025, that's extremely competitive because these incentives are just needed in order to finance your project to make that thing happen.
A lot of people might have heard of the new market. Explain the new market.
New market tax credits are federal credit that are used whenever you are bringing new businesses into an area that needs them. And I can't speak to what exactly all the rules are. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty complicated animal, the new market tax credit, and they're hard to get and they're very competitive. So it helps if you are, say, redeveloping a building and you're leasing to a doctor's office or some kind of medical provider or a grocery store in an area that's a food desert or a nonprofit, all of those things help you get points. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like getting LEED certified. You have to get a whole bunch of points for various things, and you can combine it in different ways. But the tax credits all tend to work together to make projects comfortable for banks to provide financing for
right.
them.
Now, the Foundation for Architecture, as you mentioned, is looking at an economic impact of the historic tax credit, which I know each year at the legislature, there's a sense that legislators have really not known what that amount is. How important is that to have that figure, a figure in their hands that you can say, yes, you're going to save $20 million, but if it is working, then you're going to eliminate X mm-hmm. times that $20 million of benefit to the state?
I think it's very important. I'm excited to see what the study tells us because we've had tons of these studies done on a national level. So this is one that'll be focused specifically on the Oklahoma tax credit. And it just gives decision makers and policymakers the facts for, is this credit working for us? Is it doing what it says it's going to do? Does it benefit the state? Is this something that, does it pay for itself? We don't want people to think that historic tax credits are a handout because they're actually a lot of work. You got to qualify for them and you have to follow the Park Service standards. And, you know, how you renovate the building is extremely important. And you don't get the credits until your project's certified at the end. So it's not free money. It involves government paperwork.
I think it's also important to know the answer to that question because, as you both well know, the leader of that opposition, the late Representative David Dank, you know, he was fond of saying, this just provides minimum wage jobs for the restaurant that goes in the lobby
yes.
of this historically improved building. And that's not necessarily the case either.
No, that's not, Rich. We actually did do a study about 6 years ago with numbers that we provided, again, during another one of these let's save the tax credit fights. And it was remarkable to see the sustainable jobs that it created out of it and their economic impact on the city of Tulsa. We can get you a copy of that, but we have it in our database. See, I'm older than Amanda, so I know where all this stuff is hidden. But it was remarkable to see where $10 million turned into essentially about $110 million in terms of sustainable economy and its impact on it.
My guests today are Amanda DeCourt, the executive director of the Tulsa Foundation for Architecture, and Ted Reeds, a trustee for the TFA. The Dwell in the IDL tour, which is, I think, what year is this?
This is our third year. Dwell in the IDL.
Yeah. And it takes place this Sunday from noon to 5 at 8 downtown locations, residential locations. The tour headquarters will be at Dwelling Spaces, where you can sign up and get information about the tour this Sunday. And they're our guests today on Studio Tulsa. Well, tell us a little bit about the 8 properties. Ted, give us a sort of overview of some of the properties that we'll be seeing.
Well, they're a mix. They're a mix of smaller adaptive reuse ones to brand new three-story walk-ups, the Urban Eight, for instance, where there are eight, hence the Urban Eight. But several of them are in historic buildings. The Mayo Hotel, the Mayo Building, both were beneficiaries of tax credits, both state and federal, to make both of those projects possible. The Harrington Building, where I used to buy my Cub Scout and Boy Scout uniforms, if you'll remember back
if
in the
day.
If
you're a certain age, you did. Yes, well, I was one of those.
I do remember quite well, and I loved that store going in there. But it has turned into a remarkable collection of residential lofts, and they've done a great job renovating it. Other places, the Coliseum Apartments, developed by Elliot Nelson and a partner for medium to low-cost housing for employees downtown. You know, again, we talked about before we sat down about renting versus owning, which ones are for sale, which ones are for not. And you still need a place for the entry-level person to live, and that typically is a rental. And the Coliseum provides a really slick little place to land if you're young.
And, Amanda, I was just going to say, that's one of the things I've noticed in the most recent developments is that a certain percentage are being set aside for medium to low-income housing, which is very important because one of the big issues with the gentrification of downtowns all across the country is all of a sudden the service people that work in these buildings, they're living in the far suburbs, which may or may not have the transportation to get them to their job during the day.
Definitely. We're definitely seeing a little bit more attention being paid to making sure that you have a mix of housing types in your development. And the New Market Tax Credits help with that as well, because that's one of the ways you can earn those credits is to set aside some of your units to be rent stabilized. I don't want to say subsidized. I'm not sure how it works. So yeah. I'm just talking right now about something that I don't really know details about. Mm-hmm. But I know that when I've spoken with developers, they've said, well, we need a mix. And low-income housing tax credits do the same thing, and those can also be useful for developing senior housing, which I hope we start to see more of that close to downtown as well.
Now, Ted, earlier you alluded to something we were chatting about off air, which is I see it somewhat as a drawback to an extent, which is the fact that because so many of these federal tax credits and some of these schemes are in place, that a lot of times there's no buyable property. There's not much buyable property. There's a lot of rentable property. Mm-hmm. And if you are moving, say, empty nesters back to downtown, they're going to want to buy a property as opposed to rent a property because of the tax implications. Is that starting to change?
I would say it is. I mean, other than the Urban Eight, there are other to-buy units that have gone up or
looks like
are
there are
going
some
up
East
downtown.
Village units that are,
that is that, correct.
That are purchasable.
Yeah, yeah. In development. And then there are some others in the northern portion that are getting ready to go up as well. That means within 6 months. But I do think that I agree with you that a lot of empty nesters, like their children, they want to live downtown. You know, they're tired of driving everywhere, and they want a walkable community. And there is enough inventory of unbuilt spaces, whether it be a blank lot with some new lofts going up or another adaptive reuse of a warehouse building to fill with buyable spaces. And that's happening.
Well, let's get back to the Dwell on the IDL tour, which for those who have not been on it, I got to go on it last year, and it was really quite interesting because you're going into these buildings, you're going into an apartment and getting a sense of what the living space is like, how it's being used. Some are pretty traditional. Some are more lofty in their own experience, I guess you could call it. Give us a sense of some of the properties we'll see and sort of how people are using those spaces.
I think this is going to be a fun tour because we have some units in we have a unit in the Mayo Hotel and the Mayo 420 Lofts and Phil Tower. Those tend to be high end historic rehab, and then the interior might be finished very modern. So this one will be a nice mix though, because the Coliseum Apartments are smaller, but they still have a lot of character. I went in Harrington Lofts the other day for a pre-tour, which West Elm is going to stage that unit for us. Harrington Lofts is just finishing construction. They already have a huge waiting list. So that's how much demand there is for housing downtown. But it was a lot of fun to go through that building. And the second and third floor at one point were used to park cars. Back when downtown Tulsa was a dead zone, you can actually still see, you know, 2B painted on the wall. I took a picture of it, so I said, that is fabulous. Those are very industrial, very much have a sense of the history of the building. They feel really authentic. If you're into the industrial type of loft, you'll love that space. So I can't wait for people to see that one. And since they're all, since no one has moved in yet, we got West Elm to come in and do a little staging so you can see what it's like to live in one of them. If you were lucky enough to have West Elm send you all your furniture, which I'm not. But there are also some vacant units in there that you can look at just totally raw.
So yeah, that's gonna be a lot of fun. Is the vacancy rate as far as finished units, is it really low?
Oh, it's
next to zero?
It's next to nothing. Yeah. Harrington just finished construction. They have a waiting list. Coliseum Apartments just finished construction, moved their first tenant in at the end of July. They have a waiting list. Everybody pretty much has a waiting list, and the units turn over pretty fast. So if you're thinking you might want to move downtown, you should go on our tour so you can decide which waiting list you want to get on.
Now, with those waiting lists, you would think that developers would naturally be moving towards downtown. Is that happening on its own without the tax credits, with all the extra bells and whistles that you often get in a downtown development where you just see there's an empty lot, I'm going to buy it, I'm going to put something up?
Well, one thing in our favor downtown in the CBD and or the IDL is that we have no zoning. So you can
have zoning, but it's not restricted.
It's not restrictive. You have less restrictions.
Right.
Thank you. So it provides a considerable amount of freedom. If you want to build new, your density is typically as much as you want to spend, and that's good. Is there a movement to develop downtown? I have several friends who are in the development business, and they have gone from not even being close to being on the fence to straddling the fence now, I would call it, very gingerly, but seriously considering starting to do development downtown.
Mm-hmm. So we're kind of on that cusp that we talked about earlier, about we're just about at that critical mass then.
And I also get random one-off requests from people who are looking for, is there a little industrial building on the edge of downtown that I can turn into my private residence? So there's a lot of demand to get into downtown.
Or around downtown.
Because
you're starting to see things like the Pearl District. Mm-hmm. It's starting to take off. And some of the, Gunboat Park area, that's also changing as well. So people, this is spurring out. Well, the Gunboat Park is in the IDL, but barely. But you're starting to see that first area beyond the
first
IDL.
Ring,
yeah, is starting to change as well.
Absolutely. We are thinking about doing a tour in the spring of Owen Park. We did Reservoir Hill for our residential tour this year, which was wildly successful and a whole lot of fun. And we thought, how are we going to top this? And Owen Park is really a great neighborhood. It's stabilized a lot, and it's definitely on the upswing. And one of our tour sponsors is actually redeveloping the Pershing School in Owen Park, the PS14. I forget what number it is.
It's right next to the Washington Irving Monument.
You can edit this, right? So, PS14 Pershing Studios. So they're creating, out of old school classrooms, they're creating living spaces, especially for the young artistic type. So our Dwell in the IDL building owners and volunteers and board members, who, of course, are voluntold that they'll be helping on tour day anyway. but all of those folks and everyone who's nice enough to let us into their house, we're going to have a little sneak peek at Pershing and the Pershing Studios after the Dwell Tour. Our thank you party will be held there.
My guests today are Amanda DeCord, Executive Director of the Tulsa Foundation for Architecture, Ted Reeds, Trustee for the TFA. Dwell in the IDL Tour takes place this Sunday from noon to 5 at 8 downtown locations. And they're our guests today on Studio Tulsa. Let's talk about drawbacks to downtown. Are there still some drawbacks? I know the amenities, you know, we've been hearing about a grocery store in downtown for how many years now?
The elusive grocery store.
Eventually that will come when there's enough people downtown. But are there still some drawbacks to getting more people living residentially downtown?
Parking and convenience, grocery stores, a lot of the services left downtown. when downtown started to lose momentum and everything moved to the suburbs, then the dry cleaners and grocery stores and everything went with it. So those things, I think, are going to start coming back. Right now, downtown's pretty light on retail. We do not have the amount of structured parking we need to make some of the developments happen, because you might not have zoning restrictions as far as what use you can put in a building, but if you need a lender to fund your project and that lender says, you need one parking space for every unit, you have to find that parking space somewhere that your tenants are going to find convenient. So I think we're going to start seeing more structured parking soon. The flat surface lots aren't doing us a whole lot of good.
Right. Well, and everybody talks about the parking crater in the south part of downtown.
The parking crater is unappealing, and we're starting to see it get filled in and go away, and that's a good thing, but we have to make sure we replace it with structured parking.
Now, how will structured parking come into play? Because most of the time, structured parking costs a lot of money, and the return takes a long time to get back.
But as Amanda said, when you go to a bank and you want to build, say, 80 units that you want to sell and or rent, and they say you need one per two units or one to one, the model nowadays is to build the building around structured parking.
Right.
So a lot of its cost as a standalone is offset when you absorb it into the housing mortgage, right? Mm-hmm. And so it becomes much more affordable to do. I would like to see where when structured parking is built that a certain percentage of it is designated as public. We're not doing that. Most cities do that. We haven't gotten there yet, but, we may get to that point. We may not. We may leave it up to the developer to determine how they want to use that parking space. But that's why these new developments in Houston, in Dallas, in Austin, that is the model, is to build it and essentially cover it with units around it. Mm-hmm. The one on Riverside and 17th is a very exact prototype of that, mm-hmm. and it's being done very handsomely.
Yeah. Well, of course, parking is an issue for Tulsans, mm-hmm. because parking means right next.
We think right next.
And in most cities, parking means 6 or 8 blocks.
Right. When I lived in Philadelphia, I had to park 6 blocks from my house. So if I was going to run to Target, it was quite an outing.
Yeah. But that mindset takes a long time to change.
It takes a long time to change. I agree with Ted about making sure that we include structured parking in new development whenever that's feasible. I also like when it's wrapped in retail, mm-hmm. Or perhaps you put residential units on top. There's some income to help pay for your parking. The other thing that, as we continue to improve transit in Tulsa and get more circulators going, that'll make it easier for people to live in Tulsa without a car. But the retail follows rooftops cliche. We still need some more rooftops before we can get downtown to a place where you can easily live there without a car.
And I'd say in terms of the car, the younger people, especially my kids,
they don't care.
They don't care. Yeah, they really don't. And those are that's the demographic we're getting downtown now, is that, they don't care if they can drive to 71st and back. They don't want to do that. They'd rather call Uber. to get from point A to point B, seriously.
Yeah. In our last couple of minutes, I want to ask about one of the most recent announcements that I know you were very much involved with, and that is the Palace Building, which is at 4th and Main. For those who don't know the Palace Building, Arby's has been there in the main lobby. But this is a building with a rich history. It hosted apartments for people like Skelly and Josh Cosden in the old, in its first incarnation. And it's received, some tax abatements and historic preservations, and it's going to be transformed into about 50 units.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about this. Why is this save from the Foundation for Architecture? Why is this important?
This has been my pet project in a way, because when it was announced that there may be structural damage to the building and Arby's was moved out and scaffolding went up, I went on Red Alert. At that time, I was working in the planning department at City Hall, running the historic preservation program for the city. And when the Tulsa World was sold to Berkshire Hathaway, I immediately started pestering the new publisher. Let's talk about your building. Let me help you. save it. Let's find a way to keep this building around.
Because what's more importantly is the building right across the alleyway had been torn down, right?
The Tulsa World tore down the Skelly Building,
right,
which I believe was a 12-story.
It's
about that tall, mm-hmm, for about 12 parking spaces. And a lot of people were very unhappy about that. That happened before I got here, so I was personally not pleased, but wasn't here when it happened. Mm-hmm. But I went to the Berkshire Hathaway folks and said, this is what the public expects of you, and I'm challenging you to prove them wrong. And they took a meeting with me, and they did. And Bill Masterson has been great. He was like, tell me what you have in mind. Let's walk through the building. And we looked at it, and I said, this is going to be great for apartments, and you have an opportunity to make money on this building, so please keep it around. And they considered it, and they looked into it, and they're partnering with Wigan Properties, who redeveloped the Mayo 420 Lofts. Mm-hmm. And they decided to go for it, so I'm thrilled. It's going to use historic and new market tax credits, and I believe they also got the property tax abatement from the city, which is a six-year abatement. It freezes your tax at the current rate instead of it jumping up, but that gives you a little bit more money to complete your project. And then at the end of 6 years, the return for all of the schools and libraries and tax-receiving entities is huge, because if the project didn't happen and the building was still sitting there vacant, it would still be at the old rate, mm-hmm, forever.
Right.
So it's actually a really good deal.
Yeah. Well, and what's the timeline for those units?
They're starting construction now.
I
fully intend to have them on next year's Dwell in the Ideal tour. So if you guys are listening, my friends at Berkshire Hathaway and Wigan Properties, get that thing done, because I can't wait to show it off. It's going to be a great addition to that little corner of downtown.
And that's a good save.
It's a great save.
The historic preservation community has had a mixed record of success in the last decade or so, and that is a good save.
I think that we've been really successful in the past, say, 5 years, because property owners and developers recognize now the enormous potential for redeveloping the existing buildings. There's a lot more of an appetite for it, a lot more market for it. And also, when you have a beautifully restored Mayo Hotel, I'm just using that as an example, then it's a lot more comfortable for you to buy a vacant lot and build a new building on it, because the area around you has been stabilized and is,
becomes a better investment.
Yeah. It becomes a much less risky, a lot safer investment. So we're starting to see lots of cranes in the air downtown as people are building new buildings.
You can walk among the cranes and some of the new places to live in downtown in the Dwell and the IDL tour this Sunday. Amanda and Ted, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Amanda DeCourt is the executive director of the Tulsa Foundation for Architecture. Ted Reeds is a TFA trustee. TFA presents the third annual Dwell in the IDL Showcase of Residential Developments in downtown Tulsa this Sunday, beginning at noon, from their launching place at Dwelling Spaces at 119 South Detroit. For information on the tour, you can visit TulsaArchitecture.com or 918-583-5550 for more information. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.